Frank Turner is an English punk and folk singer-songwriter. He began his career as the vocalist of post-hardcore band Million Dead, then embarked on a primarily acoustic-based solo career following the band's split in 2005. In the studio and during live performances, Turner is accompanied by his backing band, The Sleeping Souls, which consists of Ben Lloyd on guitar and mandolin, Tarrant Anderson on bass, Matt Nasir on piano and mandolin, and Callum Green on drums.
Hi, I'm Carolyn.
And I'm Bethany.
And we are
Sisters in Song.
So today we are absolutely thrilled to welcome Frank Turner to our podcast. This is our first in-person interview. Everything has been Zoom, so this
how very,
is amazing.
2020 today.
That's right. Yeah. You know, the pandemic and all of that fun. Yeah. So
it has been quite an adventure, but we have loved it so far, and
good.
We are thrilled to have you today.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so we want to first ask about your most current album. Tell us, you know, what led you to all of this and the acoustic version.
Sure. Well, the acoustic version, I tend to write on my own and then put songs together. Not always, but most of the time. So a lot of the songs started like that. Also, I play solo shows a lot, and I always have a solo version of a song, and there are people who prefer that, and I think it's fun to have those versions out in the world. So plus I have my own studio now, so it was easy enough to knock that out, let's say. In terms of the record as a whole, I mean, you know, we finished, the preceding album, FTHC, was kind of written and recorded in the lockdown years, should we say. And I'm really proud of that record, but it was a weird kind of promotional cycle for it. There were definitely some kind of quite COVID-y moments, should we say. And it wasn't perhaps the fullest album cycle I've ever done as a result. And I also finished my record deal with my old label with that record, and I'm now with a new solo, which, diplomatically put, I'm much happier with. That's all I'm going to say. But so there was a bit of it, and it's my first time recording with my new drummer, Callum. And I don't necessarily write songs specifically with other players in mind per se, but it would also not be fair to not recognize his contribution to the record. I mean, everybody's contribution to the record in terms of arrangements and that kind of thing. But it was so fun recording with Callum because he's such a great drummer. I produced it myself, recorded it in my house. And yeah, you know, it was a really, every time I sit down to write, it's my 10th album. And every time I sit down to write, there's a part of me that kind of wonders if anything's gonna come. I was very relieved a few years ago to see a quote from Nick Cave where he said that every time he finishes an album, he feels like the cupboard is completely bare and he'll never write anything ever again as long as he lives. And that was a relief to read that because I have a similar feeling. And so, you know, when you start thinking about writing a record, it's like, do I have anything to say?
Yeah,
I don't
want
to just make a record because that's what I do and sort of churn it out or whatever. And it was a pleasant feeling to kind of go, oh, yeah, I do have things to say. I do, hopefully, I'm not repeating myself, hopefully this is a worthwhile body of work.
100%.
So, thank you.
Absolutely.
So yeah, so it came together, and I remain very proud of it.
Very good.
Thank you.
Well, we can't stop singing the songs, and
yeah.
We get to see the show tonight, so we're thrilled.
Thank you.
Yes.
So can you tell us a little bit about your songwriting process?
I mean, I always feel like on some levels, there's a short description, which I don't really have a process. Things kind of show up in a manner of their own choosing, and I try and catch them and beat them into shape. I mean, I can be a little more illuminating than that. There's definitely, I kind of have like separate piles. I have three separate piles. I have word ideas, I have music ideas, and I have words and music ideas. And when I say ideas, that can, sometimes it's literally just like a chord turnaround that I think is interesting. And sometimes it's a chord sequence that I like, or a melody that I like, or a word that I like, or a couple of lines that I like. Sometimes it's like a whole set of words for a song that doesn't have any music, or a whole song's worth of music that doesn't have any words. You know, the range is quite broad of what that can be, but the process of actually writing is a little bit like being in a junkyard trying to make a cut and shot car, you know? Like, so for example, I finished a song, I think the first song that I've written since Undefeated, I finished about a week ago.
Nice.
Which I was really pleased with, because I hadn't written a song in a year and a half, which for me is a really long time, and I was feeling a little bit stuck, I want to say. And I kind of had a first verse for it, which I really liked. And the question was like, well, where does this song go from here? And one of the ways that I will try and spark inspiration is by going through the piles. So I sat down and read through all the kind of little kind of snippets of lyrics that I had lying around. And I found a quote from, I believe, Kurt Vonnegut, where he said, words got me into this, so words will get me out. And I thought, yeah, okay, that's a line that I'm going to use. And with knowingly and with attribution and all the rest of it. But that then sort of helped me get into verse two. And then, you know, it just sort of, and sometimes there's also, there's a bit of, I think the term automatic writing is a little kind of overdone, but like, if I have a song where I've got like the first half of it, let's say, I'll play it through and then just kind of close my eyes and just keep going as if the song already exists and see what happens. And sometimes it's a car crash and sometimes it's not. I mean, the best example of that for me, I have a song called Recovery, which is one of my best-known songs, and I had the verse. The first section song, I had that and I was really pleased with it. And it was just like, just play it and see what happens next. And I just hit an E chord and went ba 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 ba. And it was like, ah, okay, yeah.
That's very good. Cool.
That'll do. So I mean, you know, it's funny because there is a, by the way, you asked me short questions to get long answers.
There is a part
of songwriting that's quite ephemeral to me and ineluctable and sort of difficult to examine in depth, and I think it should stay like that. You know, the inspiration part of the equation, inspiration and perspiration, all those cliches, which on some levels you can't really practice or teach and all that kind of thing. Having said that, the older I get, the more I think that you can employ good practice to put yourself in the way of inspiration, is what I would say. I mean, there will always be a kernel at the heart of songwriting that is kind of mysterious, and I like that. You know, how did Leonard Cohen write his songs? No one will ever know.
Right.
Leonard Cohen, and I suspect that he might not know either. Have known, I should say. And he's one of my songwriting idols. But you can sort of, you can sort of develop good practice to kind of get yourself in the right place. Sometimes songwriting's like fishing for me. You just, you put your rod out and see what comes past. But at the same time, you can choose good places to sit.
I like that. I'm going to tell you the metaphor that my husband used, which was, throw a lot of shit at the wall and some of it will stick.
there is definitely some people I know who employ techniques like kind of forcing themselves to write one song a day, or Nick Cave again famously writes by, he has a sort of office that's a plain white room with a piano and it with no writing materials of any kind. He clocks in, he does 9 till midday, takes an hour for lunch and does, you know, 9 till 1 and then 2 till 6 or whatever, and just plays and plays and plays and plays. That's not quite a thing that I do, but it's kind of in my back pocket in case I need it.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And it would be interesting to see what came out of that, I think.
So 10 albums, how did you get started on all of this journey?
Well, I mean, if we're talking about songwriting per se, it's more than 10, actually. Yeah. I was in other bands. And
true, stuff. Yeah, good point.
Both before my solo career and during. So there's been a lot of writing. I started when I was a kid. I mean, I learned to play guitar when I was about 10, 11 years old, or started learning, still learning. And the first song I learned was Knocking on Heaven's Door, which I'm mortified to say I thought was a Guns N' Roses song at the time.
So funny.
And it's a great song, but it goes, you know, it's G, D, A minor in the first three chords, and I played G, D, A major because I felt like it, and then I thought, haha, I've written a song. Now, as I'm sure you understand, like, actually putting an A major in there does kind of pretty radically recontextualize the melodic kind of situation of the song. And I just thought, cool, I'm a songwriter now, kind of thing. And I used to kind of blurt out kind of endless garbled teenage kind of ranting as lyrics. And I was in a band when I was sort of like 12, 13, 14 years old where I was quote unquote the songwriter. But it was kind of a case of just picking four random chords and thrashing at them and shouting over the top. I don't think they were very good. But, you know, somewhere between there. This is the funny thing about getting older, actually. So last year was the 20th anniversary of my old band Millions of Dead's debut album, and I listened to it for the first time in probably 15 years. And I was pleasantly surprised by how good I thought it was. I didn't write on my own in that band, but I wrote all the lyrics and about half the music. And it was just funny because the way that time telescopes get older, because like I was 21 when we, maybe 20, 21 when we made that record, and the music that I made when I was like 16, 17, is objectively awful. That record's really good, and when you're 25, the gap between 16 and 21 feels like a lifetime. Now that I'm in my 40s, it's kind of like, that's nothing.
Right,
Do you know what I mean? And at some point in there, I got better at writing songs, or being involved in writing songs, I should say. And then there was a big change for me when I went quote-unquote solo, and picked up an acoustic guitar, because that was the moment when I started thinking about songwriting as an activity divorced from genre consideration and that kind of thing, and you know, really started thinking through what it meant to write a song and what a song constituted and all that kind of thing, because I just had this newfound obsession with Neil Young and Bruce Springsteen and Townes Van Zandt and people like that. So that and you know, really stripping everything back to just the guitar and a voice was quite a big moment for me as well.
Well, we are suckers for acoustics, yes. So we really appreciate it. Is there anything that you can like pick out that you struggle with in songwriting? If you get like writer's block or something like
that? Yeah, I mean, as I say, I've had a bit of writer's block recently. I sort of, it's funny, there's a line to be drawn somewhere between pursuing a theme and repeating yourself. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And like, there's definitely kind of words from one record which will show up on the next one. Like the kind of main song on my sixth album, Positive Songs, is called Get Better, and the words Get Better appear in the song Recovery, which was on the record before. So there's clearly a thought process going through those. But do you see what I mean? That, like, I do sometimes wonder if I should be writing about... I've written autobiographically a lot, and I quite often in a slightly nostalgic way, and I wonder how much more mileage there is in that tank. You know what I mean? Like... I don't really know what I'm going to write about for my next record. I kind of do, actually.
Yeah.
I'm not going to talk about it. The more that time goes by, the harder it gets, I think, to find your leaping off points for songs, subject matter-wise, because the low-hanging fruit is gone. Do you know what I mean? I've written my breakup songs, and I've written my touring songs, and I've written my drinking songs. And you can write more of them, I suppose, but, like, I just think that... This got quite deep all of a sudden. Like, I'm really obsessed with a lot of the kind of the country songwriters, whether you're talking about Merle Haggard. Everyone I know is in songwriting comes back to old school country sooner or later, because
yep.
It's the most perfect distillation of songwriting as an activity, in my opinion, and in most people's opinion.
Yeah, I would agree.
But there's something about, like, there's quite often, like, a song built just around a phrase. If you look at George Jones, you know, just wondering one and then one more and then another or whatever. And, they're quite specific subject-wise, and I quite often find myself writing songs about all of life every time. And it's kind of like, yeah, there's, you know, zoom in a bit, dude.
But it's funny, because you mentioned Vonnegut, who is my favorite author.
Mm.
And, I mean, he, like, repeats phrases, repeats characters,
yeah.
Repeats, you know, so, I mean,
right.
It changes it, like you do.
Yeah, absolutely. And, like, I don't know if you're familiar with Craig Finn. He's the singer in a band called The Hold Steady, and
okay.
He does solo records as well, and he's one of my songwriting lodestars. And he, the Hold Steady's body of work, which is 7 albums now, I want to say, features recurring characters throughout all of the records.
Yep.
Holly the Hood Rat, Charlemagne the Drug Dealer, all those kind of things. So they reappear record to record, but that's a slightly different thing from using similar phraseology. But, and I think there is space for that kind of thing, but at the same time, you don't want to just be, yeah, just going over all ground.
No, I get that. So what would you say, this is totally off topic, but how would you say that, you know, you tour a lot, so how do
sure.
you maintain, like, your health and your mental wellness and physical
oh,
health?
I mean, it's a challenge.
The best we can, right?
Yeah, the best we can. I mean, one of the things that's worth saying whenever this topic comes up is that I've been doing this since I was 16, and I'm 42 now, so it's considerably more than half my life. So, like, there is a shadow of an implication in the question that there is some sort of normal life, quote-unquote, that I might return to at some point, and there just isn't. You know, this is my normal life. This
yeah.
is what I do, so... It's not like I have to maintain my mental health just until the end of the tour or something. You know what I mean? It's slightly facetious calling it the never-ending tour of Over, but it's not 100% facetious.
Yeah.
You know? So, but I mean, yeah, there are challenges to it. But I'm, to be honest, I find going home and stopping and staying still as challenging in different ways. And the bit of in 2020 when the world closed down was enormously difficult for me. And caused a lot of problems for me, so that was much harder than touring is for me. The thing about touring has an inbuilt discipline to it, right? And the discipline is this: I have to not suck for 2 hours from 9 p.m. to 9, and I can do anything I want. I mean, within the constraints of things like press schedules and eating food and sleeping, but like you can do whatever you want the rest of the time, but you have to not suck, and that's quite. I enjoy the discipline of that. Do you know what I mean? It's
yeah.
like
mm-hmm.
So I get up in the morning and like. I put my dirty clothes in my laundry bag, get clean clothes out of my suitcase. I have to drink a certain amount of water every day for my voice. I have to do social media posts because it's the 21st century and everything's awful. But you know, there's just kind of a to-do list for my day every day, which is reasonably similar every day, even though we're in different places. And I quite like that. I kind of thrive off structure to a degree.
Yes. I think that, for at least for me, structure keeps the depression somewhat at bay, or the anxiety at bay.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And also, the other thing that I, throughout my life, have found very useful in terms of any sort of mental health issues, and anxiety has always been my biggest thing, with a side helping of substance abuse, which is currently in abeyance, so happy days. But it's physical exercise. And the nice thing about what we do is that I'm completely exhausted at the end of every show, and that's good. That's how I want it to be.
That's exactly me too. I suffer from the anxiety, and the physical exercise gets me through it too.
Yeah,
so,
I've done a fair amount of running in recent years in between tours, not because I'm trying to get ripped,
particularly,
but just because it takes the edge, it helps me sleep.
Absolutely.
Yep.
So on that, kind of on that same vein, people talk about like an inner critic. And how do you put your inner critic in its place? How do you keep that
Out of control? I think my inner critic's place is right in front center, front row. I think that it's a really important thing as a writer of any kind, particularly, well, I can only really speak to being a songwriter, but like, is to be your own harshest critic. I think that whenever I finish a record, it's funny, if you read a bad review or whatever, it's like, that's all you got? Do you know what I mean? You want problems with this record? Oh, boy. You've come to the right place, dude. Do you know what I mean? And like, because that's how you move forward.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Is figuring out what you can do better next time and what you can improve on. I think that it's really healthy. Obviously, if it reaches a point of being crippling because you're second-guessing yourself, that's not good.
Right. Sure.
But I think that a healthy dose of realism about your kind of both your strengths and your weaknesses is a really good thing to have as a writer.
That's awesome. Cool. Yeah. Good. So I want to ask just specifically, can you tell us about No Thank You for the Music?
I can, yeah. Well, the first thing is that the title has been sat on my list of kind of bits and bobs for ages. I just thought it was a funny title for a song.
It's great.
And it implies a song that's going to be spiky, but I didn't know what it was. I didn't have anything other than the title for such a long time. And then specifically, again, I'm going to try and do the diplomatic version of this. I was at an awards ceremony. I got nominated for an award for the live streams that I did. I didn't win, and I knew I wasn't going to win, and I don't care. But by the way, they always tell you if you're going to win. That whole like, oh my God, thing is complete bullshit. Because if they don't tell you you're going to win, quite a lot of the time people don't go.
Yeah.
So they tell you if you're going to win. Anyway, so I knew I was going to win, but they eventually, it was a very industry award ceremony. And the music industry is a multifaceted place, and there are corners of it that I feel I belong in and corners that I don't. And that was the kind of last gasp of me being on a major label and those kind of thing. And there were just a lot of kind of, you end up in a room with a lot of people who are scamming, you know what I mean? Trying to figure out who's famous and who's worth their social effort and all this kind of thing. And I just loathe that world. Mm-hmm. And I've always loathed that world, but I've kind of danced through it a couple of times in my life. But I just found myself this awards ceremony looking around going, these people are all fucking pricks. They ended up giving the award to the person who made, I did the live streams to raise money for independent venues. They gave the award to the person who made the most money for themselves and specifically for that reason. And then they all got up on stage and wept and dried their mascara. And I just thought, fuck all of you. I've got nothing to do with any of you. Like, and that was the kind of beginning. I started writing the body of the song that night. It was just kind of like, you know, I don't want, it's just that thing of like, I'm almost, there's a concern for me that people might think that I feel bad because I haven't succeeded in that world or something. It's like, I was never trying.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Obviously, as a writer, you have a desire to communicate, and on some levels that translates to ambition and a desire for success, and I like paying my mortgage comfortably. Right. Kind of, but nevertheless, it's like, I never wanted to be invited to a party at Kay Perry's house or whatever.
Yep.
Do you know what I mean? It's
like,
I can't imagine what we would ever talk about. Like, you know, and there are some real vampires in that part of the world as well. And it's just, you know, it's a statement of intent and defiance and of belonging in its way through rejection. So.
Yeah, I love it.
I love it too.
We have to take a minute to thank our sponsor, Brought Farm Designs. Brought Farm Designs offers the most adorable, handmade, washable, durable cat and dog bandanas and collar scrunchies. Our dogs look absolutely ravishing in theirs. Don't you want your dogs and cats to look as cool as ours? The coolest thing is that they hook onto the collar so you don't have to worry about them falling off or worry about them ending up in someone's mouth. They are perfect and they are adorable. Did I say they're adorable? Go to BF Designs 7. That's BFDESIGNS 7 on Instagram and send them a message and save 10% off your first order with the code Sisters in Song. Our dogs wholeheartedly approve.
So you did a podcast a while ago.
Yeah.
Around No Man's Land.
Yeah.
Any plans to do that going forward?
Not currently. I enjoyed the process. It's worth saying that I am super proud of the album No Man's Land. I think it was... Because that's kind of the odd one out of my catalogue, in the sense that it's a set of songs that are about other people, and it was kind of a writing project more than just a kind of lying around in a chaise long waiting for ideas kind of a... But in all honesty, it got monstered by the left wing of the British press in a way that felt just decidedly unfair to me. But I'm a human being, and it really sucked. A lot of people told me I'm staying in the lane, like... and all this kind of thing, and that you shouldn't be writing songs like this and all this kind of thing. And like, the NME gave it a bad review that opens the line, I haven't listened to this record and I'm not going to. And it was okay, somebody else criticized the record for featuring too much of me, which is one of my albums. It seemed like an odd criticism. Anyway, I was slightly bruised by the experience, should we say. There may come a time where I kind of I'm hoping that in a few years' time, someone will be contrarian enough to write a review saying that it's my best record, and then I will laugh. and I do play the songs every now and again, but it's, as I say, I am only human, and it does sting a little bit. Some of the pushback that record got. So maybe one day I want to get over that, because I don't think it's healthy for me to be hung up on it.
Yeah. No, I get that. All right, I'm going to ask you our three questions that we ask everyone.
Okay.
So, number one, who are your influences?
I mean,
it's kind of a weighted question.
It is. I mean, I can give you my main love stars of sort of like, I mentioned Springsteen and Neil Young and Craig Finn, Adam Duritz from Counting Crows, John K. Sampson from The Weaker Thans is right at the top of my list. And in recent years, Dave Bazan, who makes music under the name Pedro the Lion, is one of my very favorite writers and a lovely person. He was on Lost Evenings last year, which was a huge deal for me. Those are my kind of like meat and potatoes kind of influence. And Leonard Cohen is at the top of the tree because he is the greatest songwriter I've ever lived. End of discussion. Thank you very much. Let's all go home. Having said all of that, I think that listening outside of my comfort zone is really important. Mm-hmm. Regina Spektor is a writer who has long obsessed me. I think that she's very unusual, both lyrically and musically. She has some kind of chord turnarounds, tempo changes, imagery that are just really odd that nobody else really has. So I like that. And, you know, I grew up listening to a lot of Tori Amos. In terms of kind of music and stuff that, like, you can't... Personally, I think that it's ludicrous to imagine anyone could ever get away from the Motown hits of the 60s, and I think that they're considerably more influential in music than the Beatles were. You know, that first 10 years of Motown, it had way more impact on popular song than the Beatles did. But, beyond that, I mean, I think that there's a real sense to me where it's just like, if something catches my attention, I'll pay attention to it, you know? There's a songwriter called... William Carlyle, I think his name is, who a friend of mine introduced me to recently, who's a very, very strange writer, and I've been listening to that, and you know, Anthony Johnson is super odd, and that's good, you know. So I have my kind of basics, and then there are the kind of people who hopefully kind of mess up the edges a bit.
Right.
A documentary about Motown where they have an interview with like Lieber and Stiller and a few others, and like no one can remember who wrote the bridge of one song or whatever, and it's just like, are you fucking kidding?
people clamoring to say, I did that.
Yeah, they're all like, did you do that? It's like, no, I'm pretty sure it was you, dude. And he's like, no, maybe. I mean, fine, it's a long time ago now, but like, still, it's crazy.
I love it. Oh my gosh. Okay, the second question is the one we try to say is our hard one. You can decide if you think it's hard or not, but it's, do you have a favorite song or lyric? What is it and why?
It's virtually impossible for me to choose one.
I mean,
you know, I think that as a writer, and indeed as a listener, I have an appreciation for the finely turned lyric. You know, I think that it's difficult to imagine improving upon Chelsea Hotel by Leonard Cohen. John K. Sampson, we've just come through Winnipeg, so I've been on a bit of a John K. Sampson trip lately. And again, there's a line of his, he has a song called Heart of the Continent that's on his first solo album that features the lyric, "As I stand before an unresponsive automatic door, it's one more door that won't open for me anymore." Which is just so perfectly balanced, both rhythmically and intentionally, that it fills me with a kind of rage and jealousy. I think quite a lot of the album Phoenix by Pedro the Lion is untouchably perfect to me. The song Quietest Friend is a truly remarkable piece of writing. But I mean, if you ask me again tomorrow,
I know exactly that.
Right.
I feel like that's how it should be, really.
Yeah.
Yes.
But so, what advice would you give new songwriters or new musicians?
Listen widely and be your own harsh critic. That would be the two things. Both of which we've kind of touched on. But it's like, listen outside your comfort zone. If you're feeling kind of in a rut, then listen to something that pulls you out of that rut. You know. In recent years, I've been listening to a bit more kind of African guitar music because I've been working with a charity in Sierra Leone, and there's a lot of that stuff out there. There's a guy called Essie Roji, who is an amazing Sierra Leonean songwriter, obviously Fela Kuti and stuff like that. You know, and it's not because I'm going to make records that sound like that. That would be pretentious, but it's just because there's always something to find in a good song. It's like, how did he get from that C to that G? That was weird. I never got from it. And there's the most basic chord change there, it's C to G. But sometimes he does it in a way that you weren't expecting. Mm-hmm. I went through a long phase a few years ago, about 10 years ago, of learning bluegrass guitar. Because it's a really interesting way, again, of moving between basic chords. It's all pretty 1-4-5 bluegrass, but there's so many kind of weird incidentals in there, and that can influence your sense of melody and all the rest of it. Listen widely, and then be your own house critic. Like, finish a song, celebrate it, be a champion for yourself as well, but also think, you know, why isn't this song Hallelujah or whatever, do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Why isn't this song Hallelujah? What can I do better next time? I'm always haunted. This is somebody else we should have mentioned, who is a non-musical influence on what I do. There's a writer called Clive James, mm-hmm. who's an Australian literary critic and poet, who is easily one of my bigger influences in life. In everything. I mean, he's just the most... There's a book called Cultural Amnesia by Clive James, which you should read.
Okay.
Post-haste. And he once described writing as the delicate art of trying to say exactly what you mean, and I love that, because it sounds so simple, but it's actually the hardest thing in the whole world to say exactly what you mean. And you know, when I finish a song and try and look at it with any degree of objectivity, there's a sense of like, well, how successful was I in saying exactly what I mean? And sometimes I go, very successful, well done, pat myself on the back. And sometimes I go, yeah, it's nearly there. And sometimes that means go back into it and edit more, and sometimes you go, well, I think this song is what it's going to be.
Sure.
But maybe this goes back to what we were saying earlier about kind of theme subjects. Maybe I'll come at that topic from another angle. But, you know, for myself, there's a song on Undefeated called Somewhere Between, which is the most important song on that record for me, and that took so long to write that song because it's about a very delicate topic of imposter syndrome. And I knew I had to get it exactly right, and every goddamn syllable in that song has been worked over. So,
I get that.
I get that too. Yeah, I totally get that. We are going to ask you now to do a shameless plug for yourself.
Oh yeah, sure, please.
Tell us where we can find your music. What socials?
Where can you find my stuff? On the internet. Google my name, and you'll find it. I mean, most of my handles are just my name. So Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. I even have a TikTok account, if you can believe such a thing, which incidentally I just use for playing songs. Like, I'm not going to try and do a dancing video or try and be funny because those things are beyond me. So it's easy enough to find me and what I do.
And may we add thank you for putting your songs out there, your tutorials.
Yeah, my pleasure. It's a fun thing to do, you know. I've done it here and there over the years, but this I think is the first time I've actually just sat down and done the whole record.
So cool.
Yeah, I think, it's a funny thing, like, occasionally people reach out to me and ask if it's okay if they cover my songs, and it's just like, fucking cover it, write another verse and claim you wrote it. I mean, if I actually see you do it in person, I might have a word, but like, you know, to me, possessiveness in songwriting is a misdirected impulse to my mind. It's like, a long time ago, I read an interview with Evan Dando, who is a songwriter I spent a lot of time thinking about coming up. I toured with him in 2008, didn't have the best experience, if I'm honest, but not of the songs. I'll leave that there. But he sort of said, I'm a singer and a songwriter, and there are two different components to that. So he plays a lot of covers, and I think that's great. If you look back at kind of the country scene in Austin in the 70s, for example, when you've got kind of Guy Clark and Townsend Van and all those kinds of people, everybody's sharing songs, passing them around, and all the rest of it. Even if you look at, you know, when Dylan, this is funk music, I suppose, more than pop music more broadly read, but like, you know, Dylan released Don't Think Twice, It's All Right, and it got covered like 8 times in the first year.
Yeah.
You know, there was a real sense that like, you release a song into the world and then it's kind of not your business what happens with it, you know what I mean?
Yep.
And
yep.
And I kind of love that, you know? I love that sort of sense of just passing the guitar almost, you know what I mean? So if I can aid people doing that with my stuff, then happy days.
I love that, thank
you. I love that too, thank you very much. This has been
my
amazing.
My pleasure, it's been really fun. I could talk about all of this.
We could keep talking for hours. I know you got a show tonight, so
I do have
you.
To prep myself.
We're very excited to see the show.
Thank you
so much for being on the show.
My pleasure. Thank you for having
me. Great to meet you, too.
Lovely to meet you. I hope you enjoy the show tonight. And I will always say this, make sure you catch the openers.
We were obviously so excited to talk with Frank. We have been big fans since Frank started his career, so it was super fun to sit down and talk with him about songwriting and about, you know, his influences and how he has been doing this and is on album 10, which is really awesome. So Frank, thank you so much for being on the show, and thank you, listeners. We hope you'll go check out his music, and if you can catch him on tour, you don't want to miss it. We have to take a minute to thank our sponsor, Brought Farm Designs. Brought Farm Designs offers the most adorable, handmade, washable, durable cat and dog bandanas and collar scrunchies. Our dogs look absolutely ravishing in theirs. Don't you want your dogs and cats to look as cool as ours? The coolest thing is that they hook onto the collar so you don't have to worry about them falling off or worry about them ending up in someone's mouth. They are perfect and they are adorable. Did I say they're adorable? Go to BF Designs 7. That's BFDESIGNS 7 on Instagram and send them a message and save 10% off your first order with the code SistersInSong. Our dogs wholeheartedly approve.